Okay, everybody, we're about ready to start. Welcome. Thank you for coming to our town hall meeting on preemptive prosecution. What is preemptive prosecution? It is a term coined by attorney Steve Downs of Project Salaam, and it's used to describe cases in which crimes are concocted in order to preempt a person with a supposed terrorist ideology. Excuse me. From committing a crime despite the lack of evidence that any real crime is imminent. This guilty before proven innocent attitude is seen in an increasing number of cases to the tune of about probably one or two every week for the last 6 months or so. I had like a little talk I was gonna do, but since we're short on time, I'll just go into what this meeting is about. This is really partly informational and partly a town hall meeting where we're going to figure out solutions to these problems. We have a number of speakers, about 14 of them actually, so we're gonna ask them to very briefly state what their cases are. And I will start with Alicia McWilliams, who is one of the people responsible for bringing this all together today. So Alicia.
Can you hear me? Because I hate using mics, because I got a big mouth. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
First, I'd like to say I am so glad to see all the families that came out here today. You know, we really need to do this. You know, when we did this last year, it was because the cases had first started happening, and what happened with the Newburgh Four. So during the trial, we were saying we should do a part two. And after the trial, we definitely need to do a part two call to action. What I really want to see out of this is the families taking initiatives to stand up for yourself and come out, because we have to use our voices. We going to have to make a statement. Like I was saying coming down here, Obama used Yes We Can. So we need to use Yes We Can too. Yes We Can stand up for our constitutional rights. Yes, we can stand up for our liberal rights. And yes, we can say no more, enough of this, because you're losing our loved ones. You're turning on American citizens. And these cases have been manufactured terrorist cases. And I am getting sick of it. I'm getting sick of hearing it. Every week is a new crime. I can see you stumble upon a cell. But when you come in our communities and keep planting unconstructive seeds, and I thought we ain't had no money, but you got enough money to keep making these crimes. And enough is enough. I want to see us families break up into groups. I want to see work start coming out of preemptive prosecution. I want to see us take the initiative to work. I've been meeting with council members, and I do not like the response I'm getting from our council members here, right here in New York. So we got to come together, and we got to start coming together, not just one person. Yes, it's my 3 minutes, is only left? Okay. But we got to start coming together as a whole, okay? The Newburgh Four sentence will be March 24th. And I would like to see us do some work on each case, okay? Thank you. I still had a minute left. Oh, well, the next thing we're doing, we want to do a visual. We want to have a visual outside of the courthouse starting up into the sentencing March 24th. So we're trying to mobilize and get people to come out, you know, for the visual. You know, so let's make a statement, you know, letting them know that this is an injustice and it's unconstitutional. And we want them to know that we know what they're doing. Okay?
All right, next up we have Layla Duca, who is the daughter of one of the Four Sticks Five. Layla. And by the way, she's celebrating her 13th birthday today.
Hello, everyone. My name is Layla Duca, and I am the daughter of Tritan Duca and the niece of Shane and Elvira Duca. I am here today to talk on behalf of my father and uncle's case. The case is called the Four Sticks Five. Now, I know some of you guys have heard it before, but some of you guys who haven't, I'll explain it. First, it all started out with two informants. Their names were Mahmoud Omar and Besnik Bakali. Omar was from Egypt and Besnik Bakali was from Albania. The FBI sent out these two people to spy on my father and my uncles. Muhammad Shnur and Sadar Tatar were also part of the 465 case. As you can see there, that poster right there is like the pictures of the informants. Okay. Those were the informants that set up my father and uncles. Mahmoud Omar said in one of the recordings that he wanted to blow up New York City. But the cops did not arrest him. But you know why? Because he agreed to work on this case. If he never agreed, he would have been deported and arrested. Besnik Bakali, he killed someone in Albania, but he didn't get arrested because he also agreed to work on this case. The informants kept pushing the Dukas, Shnur, and Tatar to say something stupid so they could get caught by the FBI. Second, in the summer, all of the guys went to the Poconos and they invited the two informants. And during that vacation, the informants recorded every single conversation they had, and they also recorded it on tape. During the vacation, all the guys went paintball shooting, horseback riding, and gun shooting for fun, not for practice. But the informants made it seem like it was for practice. I'm sure all of you guys heard a specific word on the news and everything. That word was Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar doesn't mean anything bad. It means God is great. Now, I'm sure that like when people go to church or something, they'll say God is great or amen. That means the same thing. If they can say, why can't we say it? Isn't it a free country around here? After the Pocono trip, Sadar had a map of Fort Dix because that's where he worked. But Omar made it seem that Tatar had the map because they wanted to attack the American soldiers in Fort Dix, but they didn't want to do that. All the men even said that by the religion, it is not good to kill people no matter what they have done to us. Either way, these men aren't like that. They are nice and caring people. They always supported the family and worked very hard. If you look through all the recordings, you will hear Bakali trying to push the Dukas into agreeing to kill the American soldiers. Then you would hear all the men saying, what are you talking about? We aren't going to do that. Because in Islam, there's no right to kill innocent people that haven't done anything to us. Third, after the informants tried pushing all the defendants, like a couple weeks later, they got arrested. At first, we didn't know why, but like after a couple weeks later, we knew that none of those reasons they got arrested for was true. The only reason why they really got arrested was because we're Muslim and they had long beards. If you're going to arrest someone, do it for the right reason, not for something stupid like they did with our case. Sometimes I have to cry myself to sleep, thinking about how my family was torn apart. These people are ruining our lives. That's why I came here today. I came to put a stop to this. And this didn't happen to only our case. It happened to everyone else's case that were Muslim. And like just like Alicia said, we have to come together as a group and fight for our rights. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you, Layla. So next, also talking about the Fort Dix 5 case will be Fatin Shnur, who's the mother of Muhammad Shnur.
I'm Muhammad Shnur, my name Fatin Shnur. I came here just for justice, and what's happened to the case, like Layla, she said they take him for just because Muslim, and she already said what I have to say, but now we want to see what's happening in the jail. Like they are complaining, the food's not good, they treat him very bad, the punishment for putting for the. I want to speak in Arabic, and she can. Yeah. عم بحكي إنه هو بعد ما كتير ما عمل سيء هلا بالسجن وبعفوهم ما بنعم على التلفونات وحطوهم مرات شهر أو شهرين بالإنفرادي عشان أشياء بسيطة يعني.
Okay, they're always treating them bad. They put them in lockdown like for a month or two for something that's not even relevant to. They keep, they torture them, they put them in lockdown for a month or two for something like really, really silly.
احنا بنحب انه الناس يعني انه يحاولوا انه يشوفوا يبعثوا جمعيات لكل السجناء يشوفوا شو بيعملوا مرضين ما بتعالجوا اذا عندهم اسنان كل ما في دكاتره ومحمد ابني بمدته.
She said that the organizations and human rights activists need to go to the jails and check and see what's going on because even when her son gets sick or his teeth bother him they don't get treated.
They say just keep like a couple years wait for, you know, استنى كم سنة زي ما غيرك استنى في ناس بستنى من سنة 2007 حتى يتعالج.
They tell them that they have to wait like a year or two until they get treated.
Couple years. That's it. I don't have time to say any, you know, like.
No. Okay. So what do you want?
شو بحكي بدي انه بدي احنا نكون كلنا مع بعض دائما نجتمع مع بعضنا واحنا نروح نعمل شيء بس مش نضل نحكي نروح نعمل شيء نجتمع ونعمل شيء كلنا مع بعض ونحاول نطلع هذول الاولاد بالسجن لانه حياتنا احنا جحيم.
She said that our lives are like hell and that we all need to get together and do something about this and take these innocent people out of jail.
بس يعني احكي يعني احنا هلا من يوم محمد سجننا 4 سنين بس احنا بنحاول نعمل شيء وحاسس حالي احنا مش عاملين ولا شيء.
She said 4 years since her son has been incarcerated and that she's been trying to do something and she feels like all this work and all this nightmare and nothing has been accomplished. Thank you for coming.
Hi everybody, my name is Hani Masood. This is just a reminder to the families that, you know, we're here for you guys. So, you know, the goal of this event is to really break off into groups and to better facilitate some kind of, you know, breakaway groups that will support you guys. So the only thing that we really need you guys to say when you come up here is that who you are, what case you're affected by, and what your next item is on your agenda. What are you doing next to work on your particular cases? And what's the status of your case, and then what's your next item? Because, you know, the goal is for us to quickly move through this process of introducing you guys again and to get to the group so we can actually start planning and supporting you guys for your efforts. So, again, just those two things in general, who you are and what you're doing and what you need next. Okay, thank you.
Our next speaker will be Marlene Jenkins. She's the mother of Tariq Shah, convicted for conspiracy in 2007.
Assalamu alaikum. In 2005, my son was arrested for the martial arts case. He's now doing 15 years in a federal prison in Petersburg, Virginia. There were absolutely no weapons involved in Tariq's case. However, he was not going to get a fair trial, so therefore he wound up taking a plea deal. What I really would like is all of us to possibly get together because there are too many of these cases that are the same. It's almost like a pre-written script that they have, and we are all involved in it. I am not just here for Tariq. I'm here for so many other Muslim brothers and sisters who are going through the same thing and their families. And I think we all need some help in getting together. I am fighting with my son's case, hopefully trying to get him released before his 15 years are up. I need help, and I think many others need the same type of help. If we don't fight together and really fight for our rights and for the rights of the Muslims that are really being entrapped in all of this coercion and, you know, lying and putting in jail for absolutely no reason, tearing families apart, fathers away from their children, husbands away from their wives, things will never get better. So I am really here for my son, but I'm here for a lot of other sons, also for a lot of daughters. And I would love for us to get together, and whatever I can do to help, I am here to help, and would like to work with whoever I can to help promote, us strengthening the committees that we all individually are on, bringing them together and getting some sort of results. And I want to thank all of you for coming, because this shows that we are all in the same boat and we're all fighting for the same things. So I'm welcome.
Hey, our next speaker will be Layla Yagi, mother of Ziad Yagi, from the Raleigh 7 conspiracy case in North Carolina.
Hello, my name is Layla Yagi, the mother of Ziad Yagi, who has been accused with the North Carolina 7. There are a lot of things I don't begin to fathom about America. To me, America was the best country in the world, but now my perception of it has changed after what has happened to my son, Ziad Yagi, and his co-defendants in a case known as the Raleigh 7. American citizens who have been accused of going overseas to commit an act of terrorism. An innocent trip my son took overseas has turned into a nightmare. How can an innocent young man's life be shattered like that? How can we all just stand silent for the injustices that the FBI is doing to Muslim people? Is there anything wrong with a young man going overseas to learn Arabic and also to seek a bride? Ziad, my son, who Oz gave to charities and homeless people, is now in jail, sleeping in a very small and cold cell. It is a case called a crime for being a Muslim. Each one of you, after hearing my speech, has two choices. Be selfish and ignore what is happening to innocent people and turn your back and hide, or decide to speak up and do something. How can we all be misled? Can we just think maybe, just maybe, the FBI is overacting and overdoing it and going out of its way to target Muslim people? Where are our rights as Americans? There's one thing I cannot understand, how Americans can be easily misled. Americans should turn off TV and research for themselves on the net to see what exactly is going on in this world. Why do you think that the government's trying to censor the net to keep us blindfolded as much as they can? I wonder sometimes if there is a thing as a homegrown terrorist, as homegrown terrorism, or if the government has coined the word terrorism for their own gain. Most of these cases that we hear on TV are created and funded by the FBI. How sick is that? Now, there is something really, really wrong for the FBI to deliberately go after Muslim young men for months and fund them with money to convince them to go blow up a synagogue or something else. And my son's case is different. He is one of the North Carolina 7 who went overseas with his friend to get married and have fun. But the FBI decided to make something out of his trip. I am so very sick and tired of these games. I need my son out of jail. He has been in jail for almost a year and a half, awaiting trial. I need your help and every American's help to stop the oppression of our young Muslim men. Please join me at Please Support Ziad Yagi on Facebook to read more about my son. Thank you for listening.
Our next speaker will be Shireen Siddiqui, mother of Shifa Siddiqui, who will be speaking on behalf of her son.
Assalamu alaikum. Greetings of peace. Thank you for having me here today. I am Shireen from Atlanta, Shifa Siddiqui's mother. All praise is to God. My son was always a spiritual person, devoted to learning his religion, engaged in obtaining formal Islamic education, including the memorization of the Quran, and committed to understanding the Arabic language. in which he is fluent. Our government targeted him because my son has the ability to teach about Islam through his writings, translation works, and speech, but they could not charge him for this. So they manufactured a case to keep him in prison. They kidnapped Shifa, a born American citizen from Bangladesh, when he was 19, a few days after his wedding in April 2006, and kept him in a secret location for days before he was rendered to the US. He was tortured in solitary confinement for over 3 years and physically assaulted before his case went to trial in the summer of 2009. The prosecutors claimed my son and his friend were going to do jihad and needed to be stopped. But our Prophet, peace be upon him, said, the best form of jihad struggle is when one stands up before an oppressor or an abusive ruler and speaks the truth. My son stood up for his beliefs and revealed the truth about his case by representing himself at his own trial. But all praise is to God. He stood up for justice and truth. So I don't know for what jihad is our government still holding him. The lead US attorney in Atlanta was promoted to be the Georgia Supreme Court judge within 24 hours of my son's conviction. As you can see, there is a nefarious politics in place against Muslims in this country, and many people are profiting from this. This is our country, yet we are being oppressed simply because of our faith. My life has been disrupted and now filled with depression and tears. We have written to President Obama, Eric Holder, and continue to write to them to end this injustice and release my child, but to no avail. We are currently writing letters to our president to talk him about releasing my son, and I would like all of your help in this effort. Shifa is currently located in the Communication Management Unit in the Federal Prison in Marion, Illinois, where his health has continued to decline. I am unable to see him regularly so far away. It is very painful for me to visit my son through a window where I cannot touch or hug him. But my son keeps me strong. He always tells me, Ammi, don't worry for me. I am in the care of Allah. It is I who is truly free from the corruption and the imprisonment of the material world. So just pray for me and praise Allah. This is how we are coping with our situation. It is time for all of our families and communities to stand firm in solidarity with our sons collectively and demand their release and change all unconstitutional laws. I think we should meet with our president and demand to stop this injustice and free our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Shireen. I should note that Shireen's case was brand new to all of us. We didn't even know who she was until we met her today. Just a testament to the fact that these are happening constantly, and there's new ones every day. So our next person will be Noor Alashi, and she is the mother of, or the daughter, sorry, of Ghassan Alashi, of the Holy Land 5 case.
I hope I don't look like the mother. Sometimes I go hungry on purpose. so I can feel Baba's pain for a few hours, so I can share his angst. It's my way of connecting with him. I learned self-control by observing his patience. If I catch myself becoming irate, I refrain from eating the delectable piece of raspberry pie that I pined for all day. If Baba's not angry, then how could I be? If he's so calm, mustn't I remain poised? I shouldn't feel lonely because Baba's lonelier. I don't deserve to feel trapped. Baba smiles at me when he sees me during visitations, laughs when we talk on the phone. I force myself to smile back. It's physically and emotionally exhausting, but at least I constantly remind myself, I am free. I'm the daughter of political prisoner Ghassan al-Ashri, and I'm a writer, I'm an artist, and that was an excerpt of my book in progress. I know we only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to try to make this as quickly as possible, but I really just, you know, as I was trying to think of what I was going to say today in these 5 minutes, this is really the only thing that I kept coming back to, but I really just want you to picture this. A 57-year-old man with a closely cropped beard doing a headstand. It's not your usual headstand, he explains. All the weight must go on your arms. He is stretching his legs up and then bending his knees down. It's a stretch he found in his book, Pilates for Men. He stands, and the world is right side up again, only he's behind a plexiglass wall. So at that point, prison guards burst into the room. What are you doing, Mr. Alashi, they say. I'm teaching them, he says. I'm teaching them. Of course, I'm talking about my father. And it was at this moment that, and this was 2 weeks ago on Thanksgiving Day, but it was at this moment that it all came back to me. And when I say all, I mean the arrests, the trials, the visitations, at that moment of basic humiliation. I hadn't seen my father in a year and a half, and when I finally saw him and he was demonstrating Pilates in front of us, a group of men burst into the room asking him what he was doing, demanding that he stop. So really, really quickly, I probably have like 2 minutes at this point. But I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the case. He is, my father's a Palestinian refugee from Gaza City who immigrated to the United States in the late 70s. And then 10 years later, he started a charity. It was called the Holy Land Foundation, and it became the largest Muslim charity in the country. And 3 months after 9/11, the Bush administration shut down this charity. And after a hung jury and a retrial in 2007 and 2008, the Holy Land Five were sentenced. My father and another man were sentenced to 65 years in prison for giving humanitarian aid to Palestinians. So he's being held at a CMU that was mentioned today in Marion, Illinois, and these are called Little Guantanamos because two-thirds of the inmate population are of Middle Eastern descent. And so just to quickly wrap up, what I really, really am here for today, and I think this is just such an amazing event, is really to help build this massive social campaign to free the Holy Land Five. Now, the case is under appeal at this point, and it's probably going to be another year, year and a half, until we hear back regarding the appeal. But really just to, and we're going to talk more about this in the breakout sessions, but to really just, you know, December 4th, 2001 was when the charity was shut down. December 4th, 2011 is the 10th year anniversary of when the largest Muslim charity was shut down. So to really emphasize this, this is one of the main ways to really just kind of push this in the media and just to have everybody talking about this, like Julian Assange and WikiLeaks is now in everybody's minds and everybody's discussions, we too can make this happen regarding the case of the Holy Land Five, regarding material material support cases, regarding preemptive prosecution cases, because at the end of the day, it's the same thing. It's free speech, and this is why these men are in prison. I really look forward to talking to you more in the breakout sessions. Thank you.
This is another case that's new to the organizer. Tamar Mahana will be speaking about the case of his brother, Tariq Mahana.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Can you guys hear me clearly? Or my brother, Tariq Mahana, like myself, he was born here in the States. We grew up here. We were born in Virginia, raised in Boston for the most part. Graduated from pharmacy school, both of us, around two years ago. And thought I always had a passion for helping people. And in particular, even before he was taken, Muslim political prisoners really kind of occupied the core of that passion. And you know, I think that a lot of what's happened to him is because, you know, certain agencies in society would like for those cases to be swept under the carpet, you know, and not looked at too closely. And my brother was very vocal about making sure that cases, for example, like Afia Siddiqui's, were not swept under the carpet. In 2008, after some extended period of harassment, the FBI told my brother, you know, I mean, they basically told him, like, you know, we want you to be on our side because, you know, we know that the community knows you quite well and you're trusted and, you know, the community, you're in good standing with the Muslim community. So, you know, we kind of want you to side with us in the event that we were to accuse somebody of something that they didn't do. And naturally, my brother, he has strong principles and he refused. And he repeatedly refused despite pressures by my parents to tell him to succumb. But he continued to refuse, and the FBI told him, well, if you don't help us, then we're going to make your life a living hell. According to my brother, that's verbatim. That's what they said. And he continued to refuse. And I remember those days, like, how intensely my father tried to tell him, like, you know, like, you don't have to help them, but, like, at least, you know, like, don't resist so much. But, you know, in the end, like, they charged him with a bogus false statement to an FBI agent charge in 2008. From 2008 to 2009, nothing really changed because there was no false statement. It was a bogus charge. In 2009, when they saw that nothing was happening and they're blowing all this money, basically, then the FBI kind of, they reissued a motion basically that, like, you know, allowed them to receive another warrant for my brother's arrest, even though he hadn't done anything. He hadn't done anything new between 2008 to 2009. Clearly, he hadn't done anything before 2008 because, you know, his case was going absolutely nowhere. But the FBI, I guess, gets bitter when you refuse to cooperate with them. And my brother's currently, he's been in isolated confinement since October of 2009. So that's, you know, over a year at this point. And we're hoping to see some changes coming up soon. We have a legal team that's pretty aggressive, and we're going to fight this as aggressively as we possibly can. Alhamdulillah for everything that Allah gives us. Alhamdulillah for the fact that my brother is being very, very patient. Like, it's astonishing how strong he is. He's an inspiration to my family. And alhamdulillah to, like, our helpers, like his defense group, who we have Leila Murad over there in the third row over here. Like, thank God for these people. And I think something that's gone unmentioned that we really need to be aggressive about and that we can't overturn this without is getting the support of our communities behind us. Yes. You know, unless we can get, at the very least, like our Muslim communities behind us, we're gonna have a very uphill fight. So, like, that's something that I haven't really seen addressed here. And unless we are aggressive with doing that, you know, a lot of things will be very difficult for us. I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened in U.S. history. You know, like if you look at the Japanese during World War II, they got it pretty bad. You know, I mean, sometimes I ask myself whether this is, whether the same thing is going to happen to the Muslimin. You know, because the Japanese, for those of you who don't know, they were forcefully moved into prison camps in like Utah and places like that, all the ones on the West Coast. You know, who knows if it'll get to that point with the Muslimin or not. Personally, like, I know my family and I are very disappointed in this country. I mean, it's not like we didn't realize these things happened before, but after this, I think my family's quite eager to leave this country. But at the same time, I think that it would be a disservice to the people who haven't, you know, been able to save their loved ones from this system. I think that if we really want to make a change, then we need to aggressively push for our Muslim communities to get behind us. And if we can do that, then we'll start seeing some things getting better. Thank you.
Our next speaker doesn't need any introduction to many of you in this room. He's Faisal Hashmi, the brother of Fahad Hashmi.
Assalamu alaikum. It's apt that today, before the sun went down during the course of the day, was Ashura. For us, the day that God saved Moses and his people. So we need that here for many of us in this room, where we need God's intervention to save our families, our loved ones, because Pharaoh's reign is pretty dark and it's pretty tyrannical. And as witnessed by many of the mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, daughters, have told about their loved ones suffering in the prisons, these dark prisons. And, you know, my brother's case, Fahad Hashmi, many of you know the story, so I don't really need to go too deep into it. He suffered 3.5 years of pretrial solitary confinement, and he agreed to a plea deal. And his situation, numbers-wise, his plea deal means after four and a half years of being in jail, he has 8 more years of being in jail. He was facing 70 more years. So, inshallah, we'll get him back. But, you know, I'm not happy of just getting him back. I want every one of you here to get, you know, your loved one back. But we haven't spoken to Fahad. Many of you have spoken to your loved ones. For him, in his current circumstances, we don't talk to him. We had two visits in a year and a half, one phone call. And he's in Florence, Colorado right now. Ever since he was moved from here, the Attorney General has reapplied the special administrative measures. So amongst here, I know everyone's case. Trust me, I know the lawyers for your cases. I know what they did on the cases. So for my case, in terms of visitation for my brother, he's on the severe end of it. Like, you know, he's really trying to be made an example of by the treatment that they're, you know, doling out to him, the lack of family visits and all that. So that's where we're at with our case. We're going to pursue a legal challenge on his special administrative measures, his solitary confinement, his communication to his family, which was, you know, heavily curtailed. So that's where we are going forward on his case. We have formed a group called the Muslim Justice Initiative that's trying to look at this, at the broad stroke, try to understand what's going on, these variety of cases, and how to address them in a systematic, comprehensive fashion. And, you know, the problem is comprehensive, so the solution has to be comprehensive. And there have been outlets that people have gone to and have found that they were futile. But you know what? You know, my conviction is when you go out and you express your case and you tell the people, not necessarily the leaders, not necessarily the councilmen, the presidents, because they're not hearing, because they're the pharaohs of today's. You tell the people about your case and you point out the injustice, the radicalization paradigm. Everything falls under a radicalization paradigm. The targeted assassination of somebody who you don't like their speech. You know, God forbid, Anwar Oleki, you know, said some words that you found offensive. So what we found out with these cases is the facade of justice exists. This country was never a great country. It was a prosperous country. Don't fool yourself to ever think you came here from your lands in Gaza, in Syria, in Damascus, in Cairo, in Karachi, in Dhaka, to think this was a great place. Many people before us knew how horrible this place was. We are just the victims of it now. So, you know, prosperity and greatness are two different things. And we have to understand that. Now, I heard my friend Tamer talk to you about, you know, the Muslim community and how we deal with it. Well, you know, the Muslim community, one of the premier groups last week, last Friday, honored Eric Holder at the Muslim Advocates Dinner. So this is how we're dealing with it. This is how disjointed our community is. He's the keynote speaker, the honored guest of one of the civil rights groups of the Muslim community. And what did he tell them? He said, you don't know your facts about these entrapment cases. We are just. Didn't Pharaoh say that he was just? Yeah. So we are presented with this new paradigm, and we are presented with besiegement of our mosques, of informants, of entrapment, and this is what we have to deal with in a smart way. And I thank everybody for their time. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Faisal. Our next speaker will be Hasham El-Maliki. Sorry if I got the pronunciation wrong. He's a family member of Farouk Ahmed, arrested in Virginia for suspected bombing of a metro station.
Assalamu alaikum. Just a slight correction. I'm a friend of the family. Farouk is my personal friend. He was in Staten Island in the same mosque that I usually go to for a few years before he moved to Virginia about 5 years ago. His brother, wife, and mother are stuck in the traffic. They are coming from Virginia, but they're somewhere in Manhattan, so I hope that you will get to meet them in a few. Briefly, this is, of course, a little different than the other cases because this is still pre-trial. So I'm going to be very careful in explaining what took place. We were shocked that about two or three weeks, less than a month before the last elections, I was on my email and then I logged out on Yahoo email, and then you have these headlines and I see his name and arrested in Virginia, and I got a double take, and then I called a friend of mine who also lives in Virginia. I said, is this our Farouk? He said, yes, I was just visited by the FBI and they were trying to talk to me and stuff like that. Long story short, what Farouk is accused of is, again, the same old story, is material support to terrorism, among maybe other charges, he allegedly, knowingly supplied information or intelligence to who he believed to be Al-Qaeda operatives to put bombs in the D.C. Metro system. Knowing Farouk for years, I have no doubt in my heart and mind that he is a kind person, a loving person, a caring person. He wouldn't for a second think of harming anyone. He had paid thousands of dollars to go to Hajj, the annual pilgrimage, for his first time for himself and his wife a few weeks before. FBI is alleging that once he comes back from Hajj, he's going to travel again overseas to support terror or something like that. So assuming that is the case and you know that he's coming back, why do you take him and forfeit his chances of Hajj? But anyway, lockdown, he gets only 1 hour out in a closed area. He gets two phone calls a week, and he gets two visits a week through a glass window like some others who explained it. I'm looking forward to speak with all of you and the family when they come to see what we can do from what we learned from the previous cases, what can we do for these, and what we can do going to the trial for Farouk. Also, very briefly, there is another case for Abdul Hamid Shahada. He was arrested in Hawaii under the charges that he lied to federal agents. If you notice, this is not a terrorism charge, but the FBI is alleging that about 2 years ago, in 2008, he boat. By the way, Abdelhamid is Palestinian-American. He's not Pakistani. So they alleged that in 2008, he bought a one-way ticket to Pakistan. And he did travel with that one-way ticket. He was refused entry. And then he came back, and he was let go, apparently. Maybe they spoke, the FBI spoke with him, whatever. So go figure. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Shahina Parveen. She is the mother of Mateen Siraj, who was convicted in 2006 in NYC.
Shahina is going to say her speech in Urdu, and at the end I'm going to translate in English for everyone.
मैं ड्रम की मेंबर हूं देसी राइजिंग अप एंड मूविंग मैं शहवार मतीन सिराज की मां हूं 9/11 के बाद अमेरिका में मुसलमानों के लिए माहौल अच्छा नहीं है हमारी मस्जिदों और कम्युनिटियों में पेड एजेंट और मुखबिर भेजे गए हैं जो क्रिमिनल पकड़ने की बजाय मुसलमान नौजवानों को झूठे और खुद साख्ता टेररिज्म के केसों में धोखे और साजिश करके फंसाते हैं ऐसे ही NYPD के एक एजेंट जिसको बहुत पैसे दिए गए उसने मेरे बेटे शहवार मतीन को इसी तरह फंसाया इस NYPD की बनाई हुई साजिश की बुनियाद पर मतीन को 30 साल की 30 इयर्स की सजा दी गई हालांकि इसको सच्चा इंसाफ नहीं दिया गया इस वक्त मेरा बेटा हालांकि मेरे बेटे ने इस झूठी साजिश में कोई हरकत अंजाम नहीं जहां पर मुसलमानों को के लिए एक जेल बनाया गया है जिसको CMU कहते हैं उस वक्त मेरा बेटा 19 साल का था और दिमागी तौर पर ज़्यादा ज़हीन नहीं था इन सब केसों में ऐसे ही किस्म के लोगों को निशाना बनाया जाता है जिसको ये आसानी से फंसा लेते हैं ये एजेंट्स पहले कहानियों वेबसाइट हॉरिबल तस्वीरों जिसमें मुसलमानों पर जुल्म व सुतुम वाली यानी कि मर्दों और औरतों पर तस्वीरें आर्टिकल और तानों के ज़रिए पहले आग लगाते हैं फिर उल्टा इल्ज़ाम लगाते हैं अब हमारा सवाल ये है कि ये सब क्यों हो रहा है जैसे मेरे बेटे का केस अगस्त 2004 रिपब्लिकन नेशनल कन्वेंशन के चंद दिन पहले बनाया गया इसी तरह ये बहुत सारे केसेस ऐसे ही मौक़ों पर बनाए जाते हैं जैसे इलेक्शन या कांग्रेस में जंग के बजट के वोट से पहले ताकि वो इनकी जंगों में इनका साथ दें साथ साथ ये चाहते हैं कि अमेरिका में मुसलमान खामोश और सहमे हुए रहें जैसे कुछ जंगें अफगानिस्तान इराक और अब पाकिस्तान यमन फलस्तीन और सोमालिया में हो रही हैं इसी ही तरह एक जंग अमेरिका के मुसलमानों पर और इमिग्रेंट्स पर भी हो रही हैं लेकिन मैं मेरे साथी और आप सब यहाँ ये कहने आए हैं हम डरते नहीं हम खामोश नहीं ये हमारे खिलाफ ये जुल्म और जंग अब बंद कर दो शुक्रिया
So I will briefly translate what it is that she said. My name is Shahina Parveen Siraj. I'm a member of DRUM, Desi's Rising Up and Moving, and I'm the mother of Shahawar Mateen Siraj. Since 9/11, the environment for Muslims in America has not been good. In our mosques and communities, the government sends paid and undercover agents who, instead of catching wrongdoers, chase after our youth by entrapping them with lies and fabricated cases. And in this way, an NYPD agent who was paid a lot of money worked to entrap my son. Based on this conspiracy fabricated by the NYPD, Mateen was sentenced 30 years in prison, even though my son did not even undertake any acts and was just based on words. He was denied true justice. Currently, he is in prison in Terre Haute, Indiana, where they have created a special prison known as Communications Management Unit, which is mainly intended for Muslims. At the time, my son was 19 years old and not very bright or mature. In all these cases, these always go after certain kinds of vulnerable people they can easily entrap. These agents first use stories, websites, pictures of torture and taunts in order to incite and provoke their targets and turn around and blame them and arrest them. Now our question is, why is all this happening? Just like my son's case was brought out just days before the 2004 Republican National Convention, similarly, many of these cases are brought out at such opportune moments, like before elections or Congress votes on the war budgets. Always seemingly coincidental, isn't it? As in this country's history, the people from the countries against whom war is being waged have been targeted here at home as well. The purpose of all these cases is to keep Americans fearful of Muslims and immigrants.
My son's picture is the one who has graduated from jail. He was 19 years old. He was the age when he came back. And this is Terre Haute, Indiana. My son has grown up. देखें सीएमयू में मेरे बेटे को बहुत ज्यादा तशद्दुद हुआ है
Okay. Our next speaker will be Lynn Jackson from Project Salaam.
It was a national problem. So in August of 2008, we decided to form Project Salaam. What we have done so far, we have a website, projectsalaam.org. We have a database of hundreds of preemptively prosecuted Muslims. And we have written six letters that we've sent to Mr. Obama and Mr. Holder, and we have had not one single response, even though these were very carefully crafted letters that explained all about preemptive prosecution. I'd like to briefly explain that there are actually five types of preemptive prosecution. We are most familiar with entrapment because many of the most prominent cases, the Fort Dix 5, Aref Hussein, Newburgh 4, were entrapment, and we know what that is. But there's also cases involving raising money for charities, such as the Holy Land Foundation that Noor Elashi spoke about, and the Dr. Dafir case in Syracuse. Then there are the cases that involve material support for terrorism. There's cases that involve training camps, going, you know, when people travel overseas and then they're arrested when they come home, maybe many years after their trip. And then there is the category of other, which defies categorization, such as the Dr. Afia Siddiqui case, or there we have another case in Albany, the Imam Umar case. The types of things that we are doing, in a few minutes you'll hear from the Honorable Dominic Casolaro, who's a Common Council member in Albany, and the City of Albany passed a resolution asking for investigation into these preemptive prosecutions. Also, there's a new organization forming on the national level called the National Coalition to Protect Civil Freedoms. And we're hoping to have an event in January. And if you make sure you sign one of these lists, we will send you information about that event. So I would just like to thank you very much for being here. I'm very much looking forward to working on stopping this terrible injustice. I wake up every morning and I think about Yassin Aref. In the 3 years that he has been in prison, he has seen his family one time, and he misses them terribly. He has four little adorable children, and I just think of what is our government doing by ripping apart families. And all the families I have met are simply wonderful people, and I want all of their loved ones to be free. Thank you.
Hey. Next up will be Maury Saleh Khan, who is the Director of Operations for the Peace and Justice Foundation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And greetings of peace to everyone else. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see those of you who have come to be with us. And I want to say, you know, I just got back a couple of weeks ago from Montgomery, Alabama. I was there because members of the community of Imam Jamil Abdullah El-Amin, a man known to many of us as the former H. Rap Brown from the civil and human rights movement in this country, they had asked me if I could go there and to represent them and to speak to some of the elders who came out of the 60s movement. There was a series of special programs commemorating the 55th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott. How many of you, by a show of hands, are familiar with what the Montgomery bus boycott was all about? By a show of hands. Okay. For those of you who didn't raise your hands, it was a phenomenal demonstration of resistance, of what can happen when people are unified, people are conscientized, and people are willing to sacrifice. For almost a year, for a year, African American people in Montgomery, Alabama refused to take the bus, to take the public bus system because of the segregation policies that forced them to the back of the bus. And in the case of Rosa Parks, whose issue ignited that, when she refused to get up from her seat for a white male who demanded that she should get up and stand in the back, she said her feet were tired. She was just got off work and she was just tired. And she was also tired of going through that mess. And that is what sparked it. That was what sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, a year of sacrifice where people literally, they carpooled. They helped each other as much as they possibly could. And those who couldn't carpool, they walked. They walked to work. They walked to school. I'll never forget a footage of an elderly woman who, for all of her years, had been a housekeeper. An elderly woman who was walking to and from home to work. And she was asked by one of the reporters of that time, "Aren't you tired? You're an elder. Aren't you tired?" She said, "My feet are tired, but my soul is at rest." This is the level of sacrifice that we in the Muslim community have got to connect with. Too many of us are risk averse. Too many of us don't want to sacrifice. Too many of us don't want to place ourselves in any danger. Too many of us don't want to even look bad. And we make excuses for not doing the kinds of things that need to be done. We are not going to be able to engage in effective enough pushback to change things until we are willing to sacrifice, until we are willing to do what's necessary in order to embarrass this government. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We'll be having these kinds of meetings for years to come. And so what I want to do in the remaining minute or two that I have is I want to make a call for something very material within the next month. A call for a demonstration in Washington, D.C. to commemorate with the birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., one of the most noble martyrs of the struggle for human rights in America. And I should also note that while the brother mentioned that Ashura commemorates the Prophet Musa, peace be upon him, of God freeing the people of Israel through the Prophet Musa, it also commemorates the martyrdom of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Hussein, who was martyred on the day of the 10th of Muharram in a place called Karbala with 72 of his companions for resisting an oppressive caliph. And so this is what, 1 minute left, this is what we must be willing to do. We must be willing to sacrifice. Allah says in the Quran, "Or do you think, O Muslims, that you will enter the garden of bliss without such trials as came to those who passed away before you? They encountered suffering and adversity and were so shaken in spirit that even the Prophet and those of faith who were with him cried, 'When will come the help of Allah?' And the call came back from on high, ah, the help of Allah is always near. It is said by the scholars of Islam that this particular verse in the Quran pertained to a prophet by the name of Yusuf alayhi salam. And Yusuf, or as he is called in Judeo-Christian theology, Joseph, the prophet Joseph, he was a wrongly imprisoned man for years under the oppressive dictates of a pharaoh. So again, we must be willing to sacrifice. Thank you. Salam.
Our next and final speaker will be Dominic Casolaro from the Albany Common Council.
Hello, good evening. I think Maury really said it best. We need to keep the commitment going. The action has to get started. We can't stop. Up in Albany, we passed a resolution in April asking the federal government to reopen these preemptive prosecution cases, to take the advice of the Inspector General's study from 2009 that recommended that these cases be opened. But it happened because the people came out, and Lynn Jackson was pushing for this and never let up. But then when we did this in Albany, 150 miles north of New York City, the capital of New York State, but we only have 93,000 people. It's a small city. But people came from all over. The Dukas came. Other members came from all over the East Coast. Maury came to speak there to show us that this issue was important. And that's what we need other people to do. As Maury said, we can't sit back. You have to keep fighting. I know it's frustrating. Things don't get done. I'm an elected official. Some of the things I try to do, they don't get done. But you have to keep pushing. You can't let up. And that's really the key. And you are going to get frustrated. You're going to feel depressed. Things aren't going to go your way. You're going to be bothered by the government. I had a case a few years ago. I was telling someone earlier today, we actually had two Albany detectives sitting outside my house for 3 weeks because it was a case of an Albany police officer that the mayor wanted to fire, and we were supporting him. And it's just to intimidate you. But it happens. But you have to keep moving on. Everybody said it best. Alicia McWilliams said it earlier about talking to a New York City council member. But you have to keep going back and try to bring other people. People need to see the face, the human face, that this is a human tragedy, what's going on. The families are being torn apart. The communities are being torn apart. And they have to be made aware. They have to see it. Too many people depend on the TV, and they get 15 and 30-second blurbs across the TV like we were watching earlier tonight in the lobby, CNN, showing an old tape over and over again. I mean, that's all they're showing, and people see this. So they need to see the real people. They need to see you out there. Your representatives have to see you. I know some people are afraid. When I spoke at the Long Island Islamic Center earlier this year, some people came after me and said, well, we're afraid. You know, we're afraid something might happen to us. And I know that's there, but we have to get over it. You have to take that chance. It's not going to change. And it's only going to take going out, being public, bring your neighbors. They don't have to be Muslims. Bring your neighbors. Talk to them. Say, listen, you know what happened to my son? You know, help me. Can you come with me? I have an appointment with my local representative. Can you come with me? And just, you know, tell them what's this done to my family from another viewpoint. They need to see faces. They need to see that this is really humans and the community that are being devastated. And that's really, I don't want to go on too long, but that's the case. And unless we do that, it's not going to change. As Maury said, it's not going to change. You have to put the face on it. You have to not let up. And we need to bring in the community, the Muslim community and the broader community to get the support and overcome the 30-second bites on the news and that stuff and the films and say, you know what, we're real people too. We have children. Our families are being, you know, decimated because of this, and you need to know this. And then we can work on the politicians to try to get them to force the U.S. Attorney's Office to open these cases up and go back and let the defense see the evidence or the lack of evidence and let people really know what's going on. So I want to thank you. I'm the last speaker, so I know we have other things to get to. So again, I thank everybody. I'm glad to see so many people came out. And I just want to thank Lynn for getting me involved and making me drive her down here today. It's a killer.